Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. And as promised, Dr. George Delgado here with us for a pro-life open forum. If you want to ask a question about how do you deal with a life situation early in life, late in life, or when life is facing challenges anytime in the middle, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Dr. Delgado is the medical director of Culture of Life Family Healthcare. You can find them online. He's a board-certified family medicine doctor and a hospice doctor and a palliative care doctor, and he's completed the certification program in healthcare ethics at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. So ready to take your life questions, 888-318-7884. Dr. Delgado, I am excited to talk with you. Thanks for being here with us.
You're very welcome. It's great to be here.
I'm excited because turned on the news, see what's going on with the hurricanes and the wars and the diseases, and it turns out the Supreme Court kind of let stand a very pro-life law in Texas. Interesting.
Yes, it's very, very exciting. I will temper the enthusiasm in a few seconds, but it's very exciting because this law outlaws abortions in Texas once a fetal heartbeat is detected on ultrasound. So that means if they see a heartbeat, they cannot do the abortion, which effectively means nothing after about 6 weeks of gestational age. And this is really a big deal. This is protecting a large number of our preborn brothers and sisters. So thanks be to God, and thanks be to the great state of Texas for having the courage to go through with this and for standing up for life. So we're really excited about that. It takes effect today, and in fact, reports are that I was reading a post by Abby Johnson that abortion centers are canceling appointments now for these women who are past 6 weeks and giving them, of course, a second chance and giving their babies a second chance. And I think they decided they're not going to fight this, at least right now. However, the reason the Supreme Court did not take this case was because they have this big Mississippi case coming on the horizon, that, and they're going to hear arguments for that coming up in the fall. And so I guess they just didn't want two similar cases pretty much at the same time, which is very good for us on the side of life. But again, we're going to have to pray that God guides the Supreme Court so that they will rule in favor of life when they do hear the Mississippi case, which will have far-reaching implications throughout the land as far as possibly overturning Roe v. Wade.
Well, the one of the things we've been doing here at Catholic Answers Live and on our podcasts is trying to just set the stage for the coming year by reviewing, you know, I don't know, 50 years now of pro-choice, pro-abortion rhetoric to remind people of the arguments and not even, they're not always arguments, emotional appeals in many cases that they'll be hearing over the course of, oh, the next 9 months or so until we get a decision. Because I do think there is a growing sense that for the first time in a very, very long time, certainly since the 1980s, there's an actual founded hope that this abortion decision, Roe versus Wade, that has done so much damage to our society and ended so many lives, might actually be overturned.
Yes, I think we do really have good reason to hope, both because of the progression that we've seen of incremental gains, and we can never underestimate how important those incremental gains are. For those who argue that you should always go for the touchdown, hold on here. These incremental gains have gotten us where we are,
right.
So we need both. And the second thing is because of the composition of the current Supreme Court that appears to be favorable, although you never know exactly what you're going to get till you get the ruling, of course. So those things are very, very important. And you're right, we are going to hear a lot of rhetoric because the pro-abortion supporters are really on the defensive right now. And they know that they're losing, and they're going to start getting more aggressive. They're going to pull out all of the slogans, all of the emotion that they've tried in the last 50 years, and they're going to retry it and see which sticks. So we're going to have to really stick to the impassioned, logical argument, as well as presenting a beautiful picture of the humanity that's in the womb,
right,
and the human part of it. And so I think if we do that, which i.e. just means charitably presenting the truth, then we should prevail. So that's really, I think, what it's going to be all about for us on the pro-life side. We support life. Life is good. Life means love. So that's how we have to go about it.
Our number is 888-318-7884. Your questions for Dr. Delgado. Welcome. And by the way, if you have a question about abortion, if you have a question about life in its earliest stages, those are welcome. But there are many life questions now before us. Suicide, euthanasia, the treatment of the disabled, the use of embryonic stem cells and those kinds of things. So wherever your question is, it's welcome. You should feel that this is a pro-life hour. And if you've got a question about how to defend life at any stage, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I'm going to tell you something that I noticed. I read a lot of the coverage today. I tried to read what was being said in the left media, in the right-wing media, I was going to say the center media, but I don't know if we have any center media. I can't find it if there is any. Yes, I can. I can find it. It's the Catholic press. That's right down the middle. Here's
some of them, at least.
Yeah, right. Sure. So, we're not perfect. But here's the thing that I noticed, which I think is incredibly self-defeating for the pro-choice side. They don't say women anymore. They say pregnant person. This is a pregnant person's right. As if the whole idea of womanhood, which was the big thing that they hung their hat on for 50 years, has really just all of a sudden, it's not in any of their writing. They're not saying woman.
Yes, and that's a part of a larger trend. If you follow any of the COVID stuff and you read some of the reports from the CDC, you'll see that when they talk about pregnant women getting COVID or getting the vaccine, they talk about pregnant persons. So this is part of the politically correct defeminizing of people, which is a companion to the other strategy of demasculinizing men, so that men and women no longer have their unique characteristics and their unique roles.
It just seems like the various kind of confusions collide with one another, and it starts to become like a blender of unreason, where you're just like, well, you know, like the person who wants to defend a woman's, what used to be this sacred woman's right to choose, now that person's on the out. You got to defend the pregnant person's right. That does not seem to me like a winning strategy to be so utterly kind of chaotic.
It is chaotic, and that's because when you are in the darkness and lack truth and are built on lies, eventually it devolves into chaos, because order is predicated and based on truth.
Well said. Well said. 888-318-7884, our number. Let's start with Loretta in Melbourne, Florida. Thank you, Loretta, for your call. Please go ahead with your question for our guest, Dr. George Delgado.
Yes, Dr. Delgado, this is a general question that came up in discussion with me today. I've worked in pro-life, and I would like to share this with our group. A few months ago on Catholic Radio, and I can't tell you what program because I listen all day long, but the comment was made that John Paul II has said, either in a speech or in writing, that working in the pro-life ministry is perhaps the highest work or ministry that one can do in terms of pleasing God. I wonder if you had heard this, and or if you would have any idea how you could research this to try to find out where this comment is that John Paul II made.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head, but I would venture to guess that that was from Evangelium Vitae, which was his famous landmark encyclical on pro-life issues, often called the Gospel of, well, the translation is the Gospel of Life. So I would look there, and if I just pulled it up, and if you go to the introduction, the first paragraph, it starts out with the Gospel of Life is at the heart of Jesus's message. So that kind of is paraphrasing what you said there in a way. And so it wouldn't surprise me if deeper into the document he said something like that about pro-life work being one of the highest ministries. And if you think about it, it is, because life is the greatest gift God has given us. And so protecting life is really doing the Lord's work.
That's
it. So I would check out Evangelium Vitae, and you can just put that in your search engine and find, pull it up.
Even if you, I'll tell you what, you just put in the words John Paul II pro-life, and Evangelium Vitae will come up. You don't even have to remember the name of it. John Paul II,
yes,
pro-life. You'll find it. It's the one on the Vatican website, vatican.va. Loretta, thanks. God bless you in your pro-life work, sister. We got to take a quick break, however. We'll be right back with more Pro-Life Open Forum for Dr. George Delgado right after this.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Faith is a precious gift from God. As the largest religious media network in the world, EWTN has an important role in educating others about our Catholic faith and spreading the good news of salvation. We invite you to explore our numerous pages of historical faith documents, prayers, teachings, and other current issues in Catholicism today. Visit EWTN.com and click Catholicism. EWTN, the global Catholic network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Pro-Life Open Forum. You want to know about the proper treatment of life, the respectful, the loving treatment of life in any of its stages or conditions, you are welcome to call with your question. You don't have to be Catholic to call. You don't have to be Christian to call. But a lot of this stuff is natural law stuff. 888-318-7884. Sylvia in Texas left us with a question, didn't stay on the line, but she left us with this question. So I just want to share Sylvia's question. In my third pregnancy, she said, the doctors said the baby had passed away. So I took medication to pass it. Was that an abortion?
No, it really was not in the way we use the term abortion to mean an elective or induced abortion, because the baby had already died. So what was happening here, and since, well, we don't know how far along she was in her pregnancy, but essentially, if she was past 20 weeks, then we would call it inducing labor. If it was before 20 weeks, then it would be stimulating uterine contractions to push the remains of the preborn baby out of the uterus. So that is actually the morally correct thing to do, because having dead tissue inside the woman would be a health risk for her. So since the baby had already passed, there's no nothing wrong with doing that at all, and it would not be considered an abortion, no.
Sylvia, thank you for the question. I'm sorry about the loss of your child. We do appreciate your call. It's a Pro-Life Open Forum. Our guest, Dr. George Delgado, from Culture of Life Family Healthcare, the medical director of Culture of Life Family Healthcare. Next up, in Washington, Missouri, Julie, listening on 1460 AM. Thank you for your call, Julie. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Delgado.
I thank you for taking my question. In trying to choose things with COVID that don't have an association with the fetal line, and I understand the cooperation, the remoteness, but even in trying to make choices for prevention, I think on Monday I heard someone say on Catholic Radio that there's an association of ivermectin with the fetal line. Is that true? I can't find it anywhere.
I have never read or heard that, and I have done pretty significant research on ivermectin, which is a very not a very old drug, but it's like a 25-year-old drug probably, that was initially developed as an anti-parasitic medicine. It's used a lot in the third world, and there have been some studies showing that it is effective against the coronavirus, although other studies have shown that it's not effective. I have not come across that, and I would be highly doubtful if it did have any connection to aborted cell lines. I will say, however, though, the more we dig, the more we're going to find medications, biologicals, cosmetic products, soft drinks, other things that somewhere along the line may have been tested on cell systems that use cells that came from immortal cell lines that are initially started with cells from aborted babies. It's not to justify anything, but it's to tell people that it is much more common than we probably realize, and that we have to be quite vigilant about this. And I know that these cell systems and cell cultures are very practical in the hands of scientists, so they really rely on them. Now, we need to discourage them from using those by swinging our consumer influence in the way of different products that do not use those cell systems so that they will get that message. But until then, we live in a sinful world, in a world that that sometimes relies on things that are anti-life, sometimes because scientists don't know better, and sometimes they get used to things, just like we pay, you know, taxes to a government in certain states that uses part of that money to pay for abortions. So it sometimes can be tricky untangling all the connections, but we certainly should be diligent about doing that.
Okay, Julie?
Thank you.
Thanks,
Julie. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I recently saw a list of medicines that had been tested using one of those cell lines that you're talking about that came from an aborted fetal human being. And it's really, you're kind of surprised when you see it. Like, wow, they tested everything. I mean, I'm sure that that's an exaggeration, but it feels like they tested every medicine you've taken has been tested on these lines.
Yes, it is, especially the newer medicines that it is relatively common.
All right, let's. It's Pro-Life Open Forum, and there's lots of folks on the line. So we'll go to Ryan in Wilmington, Delaware, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Ryan, go ahead with your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Hi. sorry. Hi. So I was calling about intraspecies parasitism, which is basically like the argument, which is basically like a counter-argument, where someone would say, no, a fetus is not a parasite because a parasite is from a different species. But this gentleman online here says, most people make the mistake of believing that a parasite has to be a different species. This is not true, as intraspecies parasitism is indeed a reality. Some examples, anglerfish have sex-based parasitism, cuckoo bees have egg-based parasitism. The fact remains that same species parasitism is indeed a thing, despite dictionaries everywhere still insisting it is an interspecies event only. So how would you how would you respond to that?
Sure. The way I would respond is, first of all, looking at definitions. By definition, a parasite is an organism that somehow gets into or onto with another organism to derive benefit, and while it derives benefit, it causes harm to the other one. And it's not part of the natural life cycle of that organism. And generally, the vast majority of parasites are what we call interspecies. That means one species to another, not the same species. And we certainly don't have any example of intraspecies parasitism in humans. And the preborn child is part of the natural life cycle, part of the natural physiology of the reproduction system. When you look at the reproduction system, it is designed exactly in the woman for the woman to carry a baby in her womb, because the reproductive system in the woman, without a pregnancy, does not attain its finality. The reproductive system is the only organ and physiologic system in a human that needs the complementary reproductive system of the other sex in order to accomplish its finality. So in other words, if there is no pregnancy ever, then in a sense the woman has never used her reproductive system. If a man never fathers a child, in a sense has never used the reproductive system, has not attained its finality. So that is much in keeping with normal physiology, with what's expected, if you could say, of the woman's body. So this is not something that is foreign to the body. It's not something that is out of the ordinary or something that that violates any of the biologic or physiologic rules or that causes any harm, because actually there are benefits to a woman's health to pregnancy, and we know that there are many, many benefits, including much lower risk of breast cancer, less risk of endometriosis, mental health benefits. The list goes on and on. And so the fact that this is a normal physiologic process totally would make it impossible to categorize it as a parasitic relationship.
Okay, Ryan?
Yes, that explains a lot. Thank you.
Ryan, so can I ask you something? You're a pro-life person trying to defend babies in the womb against the accusation that they're parasites. Is that
yes.
right? Do you ever just sit back and think about how sick of a society it is that would argue that a baby in the womb is a parasite? Like that's actually a
It definitely is a shower thought, yes.
Yeah. A what thought?
Like a shower thought, like a thought that you think in the shower.
Oh, yeah, when you're doing your deep thinking. That's funny. Yeah, it's just like, I mean, sometimes I think pro-life people get involved in these arguments and we're doing our best to answer in a reasonable, responsible way. But that's a deep and profound societal sickness if we have, as part of our normal discourse, people arguing that babies are parasites on their mother. That's, and I think every now and then stepping back and just looking at that is helpful. Ryan, I'm going to keep going because I want to get as many on as I can with Dr. George Delgado, our guest. Monica in North Providence, Rhode Island, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Monica, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Delgado.
Hi, I have two questions. The first one I think is pretty quick. Are there any pro-life concerns with any of the COVID treatments that are available right now?
Well, there is, as far as treatments, not vaccines.
Right.
Is that what you mean? Okay. Well, the Regenicove or Regeneron monoclonal antibody treatment was purportedly tested initially and apparently briefly on a cell system that was started with a cell line that was associated with abortion. Now, this I read myself in an article that was quoting a Regeneron company spokesperson. So I haven't done more to verify that, but I think that's something to look at. I have looked at the other available monoclonal antibody that's currently available, and that's called Sotrovimab. And I have not found out much about that, but I will say it's easy to find out if something is grown on a cell culture, for example, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine or the chickenpox vaccine or the rubella vaccine, because you can just read the product insert and see how it's produced, and it'll tell you it's produced with grown on this human cell culture from this cell line, and okay, you make the connection. But they don't include how concept was initially tested when they first came up with it. That takes a lot of digging, sometimes very difficult to find. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago to Cy, that you'd be surprised how many different products really are connected in that way with testing the concept. So so I wouldn't be surprised if we found out more, but right now that's what I've discovered, that there's a possibility of the Regeneron product having been tested on such a cell system.
Okay.
Okay, so yeah, the testing. So so my second question was, so concerning these vaccines, or whether, like you said, whether it's chickenpox or COVID or whatever, they all go back to that same one, like, cell from the aborted child. Why is that? Like, why is that one so important? Can't they create new cell lines?
Well, they can. And just to correct what you said, they don't all go back to one cell line. There are probably about three to five commonly used cell lines that were initially started with cells from aborted babies. So of those, the reason they keep going back to them is because they are familiar with them. They know how they work. They have some concerns about using adult stem cells to produce cell lines because of less plasticity, less ability to do for things with them. They're concerned about using animal cell lines because of diseases that could be transmitted from animals to humans. And they've, in a scientific way, kind of become complacent, lazy, and dependent on these lines. Now, there are other lines that have been used very successfully with other vaccines. There are monkey kidney lines and all sorts of other ones. And we're seeing insect cell cultures being used for some vaccines being produced. So they just have to get into their minds that they ought to use something that's ethically more appropriate. And that's where we as consumers can put pressure on them.
Dr. George Delgado is our guest. Monica, thanks for the question. We'll be right back with more Pro-Life Open Forum right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers is doing it again. We're holding our 7th annual Apologetics Conference this September in beautiful San Diego, California, and we'd like to see you there. Join us September 23rd to 26th for a lively and inspiring conference with an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to jumpstart your faith. It's a great chance to meet all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and very special guests as we spend 4 days talking about worshiping and adoring our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. This is where it all begins. Don't miss what promises to be the event of the season. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to ignite, inspire, and inform your faith. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 888-291-8000 to register.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Jonette Williams. We bring you the truth of the Catholic faith on Women of Grace tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern here on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Dr. George Delgado, the medical director of Culture of Life Family Healthcare here in the San Diego area. And also you have to tell me, Dr. Delgado, if inventor is the right word, but the developer, maybe, of the abortion pill reversal procedure. What's the right way to say that?
I guess I was, I'm one of the pioneers.
Pioneer. Okay. All right. Very good. The number here is 888-318-7884. If you'd like to ask Dr. Delgado a question about the proper, respectful, and loving treatment of life from conception until natural death and anywhere in between, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. We're going now to Terry in Minnesota, listening on Real Presence Radio. We're about to go to Terry in Minnesota, listening on Real Presence Radio. Well, this says line five. I don't see anybody on line five. What line is he on? Is he? No. Oh, Terry dropped. Terry wanted to know the makeup of the court that decided Roe versus Wade. All I know about that, maybe you know, Dr. Delgado, all I know is that one of the dissenting judges was Byron White, and he was appointed by John Kennedy. And one of the dissenting judges was William Rehnquist, and he was appointed by Richard Nixon. So,
yes, that's right.
That's all
and
I know.
The other seven voted for, and the composition at the time was six appointed by Republicans, three by Democrats. So thinking that just because a judge is appointed by a Republican doesn't, there's no proof or a guarantee that, that person will vote pro-life. However, I will say that I think the Republicans who appointed them, those judges back then, Nixon and Eisenhower, probably compared to especially President Trump's appointments, they probably tried much more to appease liberals in their appointments, whereas I think President Trump really had as a singular object to appoint strict constitutionalists. So I think you can't quite compare them. It's not like apples and apples comparison just because they were Republicans.
No, I mean, but just by the nature of the thing, every single one of them was appointed before there was, you know, the Roe versus Wade controversy. And now we judge them by what we think they'll decide about Roe versus Wade. But it hadn't happened when all these were appointed. But I think Justice White in particular was very admirable in dissent. I'm sure Justice Rehnquist as well, but it does remind us kind of that there was a time when you didn't think of the parties as divided on abortion. You just didn't. There was no clear dividing line in the 50s and 60s.
Right, yeah. It wasn't until the Democrat Party started to take up that mantle as a special interest group and saw power in votes there and now have become indebted to the pro-abortion movement.
Up next is Tene in Maryland, listening on the Catholic Answers app. Tene, you there with us?
Hello, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Delgado.
All right, thank you. So I agree with the statement that no matter what situation, we shouldn't abort life, even in the circumstances of rape. But in the circumstance of rape, I don't know how to defend that. If someone asked me to explain myself.
Right. Okay. Excuse me, Dr. Delgado?
Yes, it's good to know how to do that because oftentimes they will use that argument as a wedge. Even though less than 1% of abortions are due to rape, it's something they try to bring up because, again, it can draw on lots of emotions, feeling so sorry for the woman and all that she's gone through, which is a great violation, of course. What I always like to say is you're executing the wrong criminal. You're executing someone who's not a criminal. And it's as if there were a bank robbery and a guy came in with the gun and then the police and there was somebody at the teller's window and then there was a teller and the police came in order to stop the money from being handed over, instead of shooting the bad guy, they shot the teller because the teller was holding the money. So that's one way to stop the transfer of the money, but you're shooting the wrong person, right? So same thing goes here in a way in that you, in a sense, you're doubling down on the evil and the crime because there's been one violation already. A woman has been violated, and she's now pregnant by rape. But instead of just going after the rapist, what you're doing is you're killing the innocent victim, the second victim of the rape, because being conceived in rape, although you still have inestimable value and you are still created in the image of God, you're not created in the way that God intended. So it is an affront to the dignity of the newly conceived person to be conceived in rape. So after having suffered that indignity and that affront to the dignity, then to be killed is a second affront to the dignity. To be killed because the way you were conceived was not the usual way, was not the dignified way, and was out of violence. And that in no way helps the woman. It actually scars the woman more psychologically because now she has to bear two losses. The loss that was taken from her by her being violated, and secondly, the loss of her preborn baby. And so what we have to do is be there for women in a very, very supportive, loving way to show them that they are not alone, that this abortion is not the only option, that they do have another option, and that is to turn this evil on its head and to meet it with an act of love. And that act of love, of course, is to save the life of the preborn baby that she has in her womb. And love always conquers evil. Whenever we meet evil with love, it will always prevail. But we just have to have the courage to do that. We also have to have the courage to make these arguments, to point out that there are actually two victims, and the killing the second victim makes no sense at all.
Tenney, that help you?
Hello, yes. Thank you very much. God bless.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
I feel like our society is uncomfortable with women, with the heroism of women who carry children to term who are the product of rape or the consequence of rape. But many, many women have done it, and they are heroic, and their stories are heroic. And women are every bit as much the heroes, of history as men are. And we celebrate men's heroism in giving their lives in war, as has been predominantly a male undertaking throughout history and all that. But for some reason, we're supposed to act like it's victimhood when you call women to their heroic role as mothers.
That's right. We are no longer expecting heroism from anybody.
Well, that's the truth, isn't it? Let's go to, but man, there are many women who have heroically carried that child, and they should be celebrated. And it's something that it's kind of like a hidden part of society. But many, many people owe their life to a mother who said, I'm not attacking the child. Jenny in Nebraska, listening on Facebook Live. Did I say Facebook? Because faith is a word we use around here. Face, we don't say face that much, but we're people of faith. I pushed the wrong button. Jenny, go ahead with your question.
Hi. I was wondering, we use pigs for, like in vet tech, to relay for like heart valves and everything like that. And there's even an article that says they've even been using it to test influenza vaccines. So why are we using preborn children and not the fetal pigs to create a COVID vaccine or any other kind of medical treatment?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the reason why, again, there are lots of reasons, but the fundamental reason why they started using human cell cultures was because whenever you're going to use something in a human, you always somehow want to test it in a human, because we have plenty of examples of medications and other treatments that worked well in animals, but when they got to humans, they either had unforeseen side effects or they just didn't work as well. Just because there are differences, sometimes subtle differences, but sometimes big differences in enzymes and other things in the human body compared to other species. So because of that, they did, and as a scientific concept, it makes sense to test things on humans and on human cell cultures. That part is good, and it makes a lot of sense scientifically. But what happened was they found easy shortcut ways to create these cell cultures and create immortalized human cell lines by taking cells from aborted babies. They could have used human adult cells. Like, there was a very long-standing but still available cell line called the HeLa cell line that was taken from a woman who had a lymphoma, and they took some cells from her lymphoma and created an immortal cell line. But what happened was that they didn't have the ethical boundaries. And when you don't have ethical boundaries, then you tend to wander to do anything you think might be helpful in a utilitarian way. And so that's what led these scientists to do that. And probably, I don't want to make any assumptions, but possibly, some of them really had a callous disregard for life. And so it didn't matter to them that they were taking that they were actually cooperating very closely in an abortion, and actually at the bedside or the operating room table where the abortion was performed, and in a way kind of scheduling it to be at that very abortion because that woman had the fetus or the embryo at the very age that they wanted. So it was something that was very much arranged. So then once they got started and they saw that it was useful for them scientifically, then other scientists would use them and become dependent on them, then they would come to accept it. And because it became more ubiquitous, and it has become ubiquitous in scientific research. And then when something's accepted and ubiquitous, then you kind of lose, even if you are a moral person, you kind of lose your objection to it. And just like you can see in our society, how if you took someone from the 1950s and dropped him or her into our society right now, they'd be appalled at what they would hear and see on TV videos, on computer games, on the computer, of what people wear on the street, of how people act, of the low percentage of couples getting married, of the abortions, all sorts of things, right? So you get morally desensitized when these things are accepted and become ubiquitous. So that has kind of led to where we are now. I hope that answers your questions, although it was kind of long-winded.
And Jenny, I'm going to leave it there because I got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Pro-Life Open Forum with Dr. George Delgado. If you have a question about the proper treatment or respectful treatment of life in any of its stages and conditions, you are welcome to call. Haven't had any, I don't believe, end-of-life questions yet today, but I want to remind you that those are welcome as well. 888-318-7884.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Turn to Mary, the Mother of God, for help bearing witness to the gift of life with the National Life Rosary. Designed exclusively for EWTN by premier Italian rosary maker Gorelli, in collaboration with renowned Catholic sculptor Timothy Schmalz. Help build a culture of life with the National Life Rosary. Available now at EWTNRC.com. Order your National Life Rosary today.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Killett, your host. Dr. George Delgado is our guest. And if you have questions about the proper treatment of life at any stage, you're welcome to call because it's a pro-life open forum. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. I haven't mentioned this yet today, but this is September now. That means this month is our big conference here in San Diego, and there are still spaces available. As a matter of fact, quite a few spaces available. We're contracted for 1,000, and I think we're in the low 600s or something. It's been a crazy year. We expected that, but we just want you to know we still got room for you. Just go to CatholicAnswersConference.com. Lots of great speakers, and you can't beat the topic. We're going to do 3 days of discussions, conversations, and prayer too. Jesus, who do you say that I am, is the theme of the conference, September 23rd through 26th, right here in San Diego, CatholicAnswersConference.com. More questions here for Dr. Delgado, so let's go back to the phones. Oil City, Pennsylvania. I didn't even know there was an Oil City, Pennsylvania. That is now my favorite town name in Pennsylvania. Listening to EWTN Channel 130 on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, George in Oil City. Go ahead with your question or comment for Dr. Delgado.
Yeah, I just wanted to. I was listening to your discussion about abortion and rape victims and the like. In my career, although I'm retired now, but 35 years was running the county children and youth or the county human services agency, which included children and youth. And the only point I wanted to make was relative to adoptions. You know, when we got babies in 0 to 3 year olds into our children and youth system, we could get them adopted out in a minute. We had a miles-long wait list for families, good families wanting to adopt these children. Now, 16-year-old with behavioral problems, well, that's a whole other story. But when it came to babies, irregardless if they were, you know, out of incest or abuse or whatever, any kind of baby, we could get adopted out.
Thanks,
just
George.
Just wanted to throw that in there, yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Delgado?
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. It really shows that, and that's been my experience too, that there are many, many couples out there who can't have children and some who already have natural children who want to share their families and bring these babies into loving homes. So the woman who does choose life after rape she does have options, and one is, of course, to raise the child herself and with the help of her own family, and the other is to present their child for adoption to another loving family. And as all of you probably know, these days, that can be an open adoption, so there can be communication and there can be knowledge of the what's called the birth mother. So there are options, and just because you take away the killing option does not mean that the woman is left without a choice. She does have some very, very good choices that are life-giving choices.
Thanks, George. I really appreciate that. And I think that the many young women in particular who, you know, this is a surprise, you know, to them, many young women, they don't know that you can meet prospective families. You can, you know, your child can be placed in the home of your choosing. They don't realize how adoption works. And what they definitely probably don't realize is what joy they are bringing to a family by carrying that child to term.
For a families we had, I'm talking, we're in a small county here of 60,000 or 50,000 now, and the wait list we would have for babies would be well into the hundreds of families wanting to adopt.
Yeah, all right, right. And so that means that young woman can... the choices, the options for her as far as placing that child are really varied enough that she can know for certain that she's placing the child well. Thanks, George.
Exactly.
God bless you. Thanks very much for that. You know, as an adoptive father, I got to tell you, the idea departs very quickly. You know, every adoptive parent has the same fear I had. I'm sure, like, am I going to feel like the father to this child? You know, as soon as they start misbehaving, you feel like the father. So you can be certain of that. Cindy in Michigan, listening on 990 AM. You are next. Cindy, go ahead with your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Yeah, I remember hearing when the affordable health care was being proposed that there was a professor from one of the Ivy Leagues who was working on finding a formula to determine who was worthy of care.
Oh.
And I was wondering if you had heard anything about that or know where I could find more information.
No, I haven't heard of that specifically, but there were different algorithms being developed that would try to predict who would benefit the most from medical care and then have certain limits imposed. So, for example, they would put in, you know, your age, how sick you were with other diseases. And let's say someone who needed, two patients needed a kidney transplant. One was 45 and was otherwise very healthy. The other one was 65, but also was a smoker and maybe had high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and was overweight or something. They would put those in an algorithm, and, of course, the one who was younger and healthier would come out the winner of the kidney. So certain things like that were being put forth, and so that's where they got the name the death panels, because of the proposition that they would have local medical boards making decisions like this, picking who would get health care and who not. So that, and I think there were several proponents of that within the people planning the Affordable Care Act. Of course, the backlash that they received and led them to quietly put that away. It does remind me of when you said people deserve medical care, that there was a certain person who has become very influential in our country who felt that certain people didn't deserve the right to live if they were black or if they were mentally handicapped. And that, of course, that person was she called these people the weeds of the human race, and that was Margaret Sanger.
Oh, yes.
So lots of people don't know about that, but this is something now that Planned Parenthood itself is now coming to reckon with, that their founder, and they are now quietly taking down statues of her and awards that are named after her being changed, because they finally see that that's not so politically correct anymore, especially when you see that the fruits of her labor are that, although blacks compose about 13% of our population, something like 45 to 48% of all abortions are committed on black women. So almost three times disproportionate number of abortions compared to their population, and the fact that they disproportionately place their abortion centers in low-income minority neighborhoods.
Cindy, I think one of the names you might be looking for is Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel from Harvard University.
Wouldn't surprise me, yeah.
Thank you.
But, yeah, that it's just so, you know, listening to some of the commentary today, Doctor, about the abortion thing and people just openly saying on the TV news, you know, the women who need these abortions are Hispanic and Black women. These are the women that are going to be missing this opportunity for abortion. And you feel like that is such a revealing statement, that the children that we really need to abort are Black children and Hispanic children.
That's exactly it.
Go ahead.
It's all part of their business model, and now they're going to see the pain in the revenue stream, and so that they'll come at us with anything they can to try to convince us that these women need to have abortions.
Patricia in Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio, go ahead with your question for Dr. George Delgado.
I have a question about if like, say, like, you knew you were going to solitary confinement for 5 years with nothing, maybe a little bit of food once a day through a slit in the door, you didn't have a Bible, you have nothing to write with, I mean, absolutely nothing, just on a slab in confinement, and you had the chance to get someone to shoot you and kill you or something like that, would that be wrong, or would God expect you to endure something like that, or something terribly abusive or something?
Okay, great question. Thank you, Patricia. Dr. Delgado?
Well, I think that the way to look at that is anytime you would cooperate or arrange any kind of harm to yourself, including and especially death, would not be morally acceptable if that was the primary aim. To give one's life to save the life of another, of course, that's a whole different story. But this would be arranging someone to kill you in order to stop your suffering. That, you know, it really is analogous to euthanasia, where you have a sick person who's suffering and then requests physician-assisted suicide or requests euthanasia. And so that is not morally acceptable, because life is a great gift from God, and we are called to be stewards of that life, not masters of the life. And to be a steward of a life means to do what you can within reason to protect your life without harming others. And yes, we are called to take up our crosses. Jesus said that, used those exact words in the gospel. And sometimes taking up our crosses is pretty easy in these days, but sometimes it can be very, very difficult. And you know, if you're incarcerated in solitary confinement, I could see that would be a very difficult cross to bear. But still, it would be a cross that Jesus would bear with you or with that person and carry most of the load if we were to trust in him.
Patricia, thanks. It's also a firm part of Catholic teaching, moral teaching, that to torment a prisoner is absolutely morally forbidden. So that situation is horrific, and I know that it exists, but I just want to make sure that both sides of that are covered, that we don't have the right to take our own life, but neither do we have the right to torment a prisoner. Unfortunately, that is exactly what happens in many cases here and around the world, because we're fallen human beings. Dr. George Delgado, thank you so much. I really enjoyed spending an hour with you.
It's been great. Good to be here.
Tomorrow, let's just do 2 hours before, and Darren, let's just leave it open for them. Anybody can call with any question they want. That way, we'll put good use to Jimmy Akin, because Jimmy's in tomorrow, right? All right. Well, we'll see you then, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.